What's up, everybody? Welcome to Kinda Funny Games Daily for Thursday, March 12th, 2020. I'm one of your hosts, Greg Miller, alongside the OK Beast Blessing, Eddie Oye Jr.
It's getting rough out there, Greg.
You're telling me, brother. Are you kidding me?
Dude, the last 24 hours have been a ride on Twitter.
How you feeling?
I'm feeling great. I mean, personally...
Man, the world's fucked, but I am good.
I personally am doing very healthy and I'm very good.
Yeah.
I did have a moment while driving to work this morning where the route I usually take started looking a lot like the road from the beginning of the Walking Dead Telltale's game where it's like Lee in the backseat being taken by the police officer. Like the road I took started looking a lot like that road, and I was like, huh, I wonder the ways in which this
What are you seeing out there on the roads? Less traffic, more traffic, same? Would you know something? Because I've heard people who are like in L.A. are like, oh man, the 405's empty.
I feel like for me, traffic changes on every given day. So there wasn't much traffic today, but I don't think that was like an actual like pandemic thing. I think today's Thursday, right? Just a Thursday morning.
Yeah. Just a normal ass Thursday. Yeah.
What about you? Have you noticed anything?
No, the only passing observations I've made is certain restaurants will be sparsely populated.
Thing I noticed is I forget if I said this on the show or before the show yesterday. But like the Chinese food place I usually go to was like closed the other day when I wanted to go get food. And I didn't know if that was related to like them losing out on business because of the virus or if that was just them taking a break or whatever it was. Either way, I was like bummed to see it because I was like, yo, that sucks if this is what, like, not put them out of business, but it's caused them to close down in the meantime.
Tim had mentioned a story, you know, here in SF, obviously, pretty much everything's a local business, with the exception of Starbucks or whatever, but most restaurants to that effect, and that they love going to this place called The Swamp. You've been. You get right where they give you like a bag of shrimp and like corn on the cob and sausage in there.
I've never been there.
Oh, it's great. You should go. He popped in over there. Like this is early on in these days of the pandemic. And popped in there and it was dead and it's usually popping. And the owner came over like, oh man, I haven't seen you guys in a while. And they're like, oh yeah, you know, you've been busy. What's going on? And, he's like, oh, it's been dead because of this coronavirus.
Really?
Like people just aren't coming into it.
Dang, dude.
Because everybody's like worried about, you know, little things here and there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sucks.
Yeah. We'll see though.
Video games
are still happening, in a way.
In a way.
Not in the normal way.
Yeah, in a weird way, but they're still going on.
Yeah.
Last of Us 2 is probably still going to come out the same
way. Well, we're going to talk about that, of course.
Yeah, we will.
You know what I mean? Because guess what? Jason Schreier says Crunch is still happening over there. CD Projekt Red's next game is already talking about their next game. And then Kotaku's got a new review solution that I find interesting. We're going to talk about all this and more because this is Kinda Funny Games Daily. Each and every weekday on a variety of platforms, we run you through the nerdy video game news you need to know about. If you like that, be part of the show, patreon.com/kindafunnygames. You can give us your questions, comments, concerns, your squad up requests, and everything under the video game sun. Of course, at patreon.com/kindafunnygames, you can get the show ad-free along with the exclusive bonus daily post show. That's right, even more for your buck over there. But if you have no bucks to give us, no big deal. You can go to twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. Watch us record the show live. If you're watching live, you have a special job. Go to kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong. Tell us what we screw up as we screw it up so we can set the record straight for everybody watching later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames, roosterteeth.com, and listening on podcast services around the globe. Housekeeping for you. Thank you to our Patreon producers, Mohammed, Momo.
Momo, yeah.
I like that a lot. Drew, it was that thing yesterday. Mohammed was sponsoring a screencast as well. Mm-hmm. And when they said Mohammed, I said Momo, and no one else said anything. I was
really?
Like, did I get that wrong? Is that not? I thought that was the name Blessing gave him. Drew, Garnier Fruitis, Blackjack, and the Kinda Funny Destiny 2 PC clan. Today we're brought to you by Upstart, Mint Mobile, and Brooklinen, but I'll tell you about that later. For now, let's begin the show with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. Time for some news. Five items on the Roper Report.
A baker's dozen.
Number one, CD Projekt Red's next game might be The Witcher, but it ain't going to be The Witcher 4. This is Robert Purchase over at Eurogamer. CD Projekt CEO Adam Szyszynski has said, the company is already working on a single-player game to follow Cyberpunk 2077, which will be released this September. It will not be The Witcher 4, he clarified, but it may be a Witcher game. Quote, we've been working on a next single-player game already, creating a clear concept that waits for further development, Kaczynski told Financial Times at a Polish conference, translation kindly provided by Daniel Klosinski. Quote, it's already working, but we don't want to commit to it yet. We'll start working on this next game right after Cyberpunk 2077. I already said there will be no Witcher 4, he added. I clearly said that Witcher was a trilogy. Simultaneously, we've always emphasized that we want to create Witcher games, and the agreement with Mr. Sapkowski confirmed our rights. We have two worlds, and we want to create games in those two worlds, Kaczynski added. That's why all planned games are either Witcher or Cyberpunk. There's more to it, obviously. Yeah. You know, the great write-up from Eurogamer, of course, talking about, you know, he drops in Mr. Sapkowski.
Yeah.
The writer of the Witcher books, who, of course, got a raw deal on the games, by his own accord, when he was like, these games aren't ever going to sell. Give me a lump sum now. And then they went huge, and then they've renegotiated since then and done a bunch of different things since then. So they can still use Witcher stuff, but maybe not Geralt. How would you feel, Blessing, to get a Witcher game that has nothing to do with Geralt?
I mean, I'm not the biggest Witcher person. I played a lot of The Witcher 3. I probably played around like 20 hours, but I never finished it. So
which is nothing in The Witcher 3.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Like I got to, I think, where you had to find Dandelion, and
Jesus.
I was just like, no more. I can't do this. Yeah. But so I never actually really knew where the story kind of left off with Geralt.
Yeah.
I don't know where the story kind of goes with Ciri and the other characters in the game, but I could easily see them pivoting and going, depending on how things left off, right? Doing a game focused on Ciri or any other character in the Witcher.
Well, that's the thing, right? That's such a diverse, crazy universe they've built, right? And granted, but you know, off the back of the book series now with what's happening on Netflix, you know, ways to inspire and do different things. I think the more fans you bring into that, honestly, a fresh start for that would do really well. Now, granted, I say really well, you are going to get the people who are super in the Netflix show being like, wait, where's Geralt? That's who I want to be. Yeah. That's what I want to do. But I also think giving somebody a new jumping on point would be super exciting. It's one of the reasons I'm so excited for Cyberpunk, is that that feels like the viewer's world, right? That you're going to be able to go in there and not be tied down by, well, I know what Geralt did in the books, or I know that in the past two games he's done these two and he has this relationship already with Triss. I love the idea of going into an RPG like that and deciding those relationships myself, letting the stories play out and the threads play out the way they do.
And the thing I will say about Witcher is that I really do like the world of the Witcher. I'm not the biggest high fantasy person. Like, I like some fantasy. Like, I like Harry Potter. I like Zelda. I like fantasy up to a certain point. Once you get into like high fantasy, once you get into the Lord of the Rings and you know, Skyrim, I liked fine, but once you get into that territory, I kind of fall off a bit. I think Witcher, though, the ways in which they kind of play around with the rules of high fantasy and create an interesting world, I find more interesting to me than other attempts at it.
Sure.
And so I would be totally down for a Witcher that is from the ground up kind of fresh and not focused on Geralt, and even like create a whole new character to focus on. Like, I'd be totally down with that. And the same idea that Cyberpunk is fun to it's going to be fun to jump into Cyberpunk from the standpoint of it's going to be a ground up story. I'm going to come from the ground floor with this character and experience this world from its start. The idea that they can do that with The Witcher, I think, is really exciting. And I think CD Projekt Red, with them showing so much success with The Witcher already, I trust them to, create a new story in this world that isn't focused on Geralt.
Oh, totally. I think they get it, right?
Yeah.
I think their commitment to single-player games obviously now seems like a slam dunk, but even when they were doing that with The Witcher 3, that was in the midst of single-player games are dying. Why would you do this?
Yeah.
You have to charge out the butt and have all these microtransactions, to which they said no, right? And put a thank you letter to their fans in and gave away a year of DLC or whatever, and everybody's like, this is amazing.
How do you feel about how open CD Projekt Red is with their development? Because they did this with Cyberpunk also when they're on the verge of releasing The Witcher 3. That's around, I believe, when they announced Cyberpunk was coming.
Yeah.
I feel like for them, they are way more open than most developers when it comes to their development cycle and what they're working on next and getting ahead of, as we're releasing this game, just so you know, our next project is probably going to be something like this. Do you like that approach? Because I know there's like been sort of like a back and forth of how early is too early or how late is too late to announce your project, or like should you be all the way open or should you be all the way closed?
Yeah, I love this approach. I think this is what a modern AAA studio looks like, modern AAA developer looks like. And what I mean by that is that The Witcher 3 was CD Projekt Red's coming out party. That was their stamp, that was their moment of planting their flag and be like, we're a fucking full-blown studio, and everybody going nuts for that game, right? In a way they didn't go for Witcher 1 or Witcher 2. And so I think what they got to do with that was bring what would define or be practice is practiced by smaller AA studios, smaller independent developers, smaller groups that, you know, like right now, if you went and signed up to a myriad of Patreons for independent developers, you'd get even more clarity than CD Projekt Red, right? You get too much to an extent of like, all right, I don't care what you had for lunch kind of thing.
Yeah.
You figure when you get to somebody like Naughty Dog, when you get to somebody like BioWare, when you get to these companies that are the names in AAA game development, right? However, they are owned by a parent company. They have been around for so long. There's so many moving parts to that machine that they know how hard it is to get a message out. And that's why you don't see messages get out from those people so often.
Mm-hmm.
And I think with CD Projekt Red, you have this company that is this ragtag group that nobody believed in, but they pulled it off. And then Witcher 3 came out and was the right game at the right moment that put them on the map in a way they had never been on the map before.
Mm-hmm.
And now they continue that goodwill. And I think they're one of those developers that I think of in the same way as a successful online personality or online company like us or whatever, right? Where it is that when they do fuck up, right? When they do put out cyberpunk art, right? In the back, there's something and people are like, wait, is that transphobic? And yada, yada. Like, there is a conversation that they can have with it that actually solves the problem or makes their point clear, or you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're able to sit there and talk to the audience and the audience that cares in a way the audience can talk back to them and they can have a conversation. And whether at the end of the conversation everybody's happy is a different story,
yeah.
But it's a thing that you don't see with Naughty Dog,
like,
right?
They found autonomy, right?
Right?
Being so successful with the Witcher series and not being owned by a big publisher and them kind of being their own thing, they can kind of operate how they want to,
yeah.
And communicate with their audience how they want to.
Exactly. And they've, instead of, you know, having that thrust on them late in the game, they've had that from the beginning. So as they've gotten bigger, right, as they've become a truly large corporate or large developer, right,
yeah,
they've still kept that mantra that they can talk about these things and they can express this. And I think to the audience that pays attention to their games to this level, they get it, right? Of like, they're talking about, yeah, maybe it's going to be The Witcher. Like, right in here, he's talking about, we're working on something. Will it see the light of day? Who knows? You know what I mean? It is one of these conversations,
mm-hmm.
that, yeah, it's already working, but we don't want to commit to it yet. We'll start working on this game after Cyberpunk.
Yeah.
Like, that's all you have to say. And then it is this idea. And, like, we've seen people flirt with that idea before, right? Like, I remember back at IGN covering Herman Hulse when he was in town for GDC at a talk, talking about the three different games they were working on, right? And being very vague about them and how they had done it. And now I'm totally out on a limb here, I forget. But one of them was the next Killzone. One of them would turn out to be Horizon.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think the third ever actually happened.
Okay.
And but I could be wrong. Kindoffunny.com/you're wrong on that one, stuff like that.
Hmm.
I think you're able to see something special with a studio that goes from having an audience, I'm not trying to take away from Witcher 1 and 2. Clearly they had a fan base. Clearly they were good, but they weren't like this.
Like, Witcher 3 definitely blew up to a certain extent.
Right.
And now, like, the anticipation for Cyberpunk, everybody's looking at it as one of the biggest games of the year. Like, in, like, the top two biggest games of the year, if not the top one biggest game of the year. And so that is definitely a step up.
That's a different level of pressure than what The Witcher 2 would have had coming out, right?
And even different from The Witcher 3, because Witcher 3 people were very excited for, but I feel like it wasn't until after Witcher 3 came out to where everybody was like, oh yeah, CD Projekt Red is top-tier developer.
Right.
Like, we look at them of that ilk now.
Yeah.
I find it also interesting that they're talking about going back and forth between these two game worlds and these two worlds being the worlds they want to create games in. I wonder how long that sticks. Because that would then mean, yeah, the next game would be Witcher. You assume they bounce back to Cyberpunk in the similar way that we see Rockstar bouncing back and forth from Grand Theft Auto to Red Dead.
Yeah.
Same thing with, like, Bethesda, where they bounce back and forth from Elder Scrolls to Fallout.
Yeah.
At what point is it like, okay, we're going to make a Starfield now. Like, we're going to branch out. We're done with these two worlds. Do you think that's, like, PS6, like, do you think that's far out, or do you think, like,
I mean it depends right now on how well Cyberpunk will do for them, which I think it's going to do incredibly fucking well. I think it'll be bigger than The Witcher. Like, I think that's part of it, I think, in terms of where they go. I do think, though, like, even having accomplished what they accomplished with Witcher 3, right, and putting on the map for everybody, because in the kindoffunny.com/you're wrong, Booya says, and this is just his opinion as well, the prior Witcher games were huge. They were just always exclusives to certain platforms, but on PC. But on PC, it was as huge as it is now. Literally, that doesn't work. If it's as huge as it is on PC now, it's is equally, if not more, huge on Xbox and PlayStation, all this. I'm talking about how the general public now knows what the fuck The Witcher is, whereas I think if you would have, in the lead-up to Witcher 2, asked anybody reading IGN, you would have gotten a very mixed
Witcher
opinion of, like, I don't
know what that
is. I
wouldn't have been able to tell you much about The Witcher during the time of Witcher 2.
But I think that... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I'll just say, also, like, you have the Netflix Witcher series, which references a scene from Witcher 3 of him in the bathtub and stuff. Like, you know, it's hit a certain level now, the Witcher IP.
Sure, of pop culture,
Of pop culture and elevation since the earlier games.
And
that
that's more than anything, I think, one of the main reasons they don't want to walk away from The Witcher right now.
Yeah.
Is that
it's
is
too
that
big.
It feels like, I'm sure they were like, Witcher 3's out, we've completed the trilogy, we did what you wanted, that's awesome. And as you see it get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and sell merch and sell necklaces and sell this and make a Netflix. And granted, I know it's off the book too. But I mean, as you see this movement, you've got to be looking at it like, fuck, we've made two other games like this and people didn't even get to play them. A majority of people didn't get to play them. Mm-hmm. Now, what do we do with this? We're in this moment. We're on this wave where this IP means more than ever before.
And it's a thing that people
And it's not a money thing as much as like we've learned so much, we want to make cool shit.
Yeah, and it's a thing that people are going to be asking for, right? Witcher 3 was so many people's first Witcher, and people want more of that. And 4 years from now, however long it takes for them to make a new Witcher game, like, people are going to be starving and ready for it, and it's going to have as much hype as Cyberpunk has right now.
Yeah.
And so I could see that being very much a reason for them wanting to return to it, or feeling like they need to return to it.
Yeah.
I also find it interesting that this then means they have Cyberpunk coming out this fall. There's also a Cyberpunk multiplayer game that they've talked about.
Is
on the horizon.
Is it a game itself or is it a mode? I can't remember.
I thought it
was a mode that they're working on.
I feel like
this.
It might have started off as a mode, but maybe kind of funny.com/you're wrong, but maybe evolved into its own game because it's definitely not coming out this fall.
No, that's not happening. Yeah.
And so I'm curious on how big that is, if it's its own thing. But then
Look at that. I'm fucking dead ass wrong from Newsweek. Currently codenamed Cyberpunk Multiplayer, the game isn't a multiplayer mode for Cyberpunk 2077, but an entirely separate entity.
Yeah. And so then they have that. Then they have this new Witcher game. I wonder like what that team structure looks like, if it's a thing where, you know, they have a small team working on multiplayer right now, and then after Cyberpunk comes out, then the whole Cyberpunk team moves on to that. Meanwhile, they're still developing The Witcher with it. Like, I wonder how all that kind of rotates and how we, like, where we can realistically expect these games to come out. Because 4 years for Witcher, like, I could see it. Because what, Witcher 3 came out in 2015, so that's 5 years for Cyberpunk. Like, it's not out of the question that we get a Witcher game in 4 years, but I'm curious to see how long.
I don't think
long.
You will. Yeah,
really?
I think it'll take longer. I think it'll take a little bit longer, especially if you're putting a new character in there and new things and new everything. But, I mean, if you already are working on it. For the record, The Verge has an article September 4th, 2019. CD Projekt Red's upcoming epic, Cyberpunk 2077, will, in fact, have a multiplayer component, though it sounds like it will be some time before you're able to play it. Today, the developer confirmed that a multiplayer mode for the game will be available after launch next April.
Okay.
Obviously, an updated story. So, yeah, as usual.
Wait, so, which one was the latest one?
This is why it's
like as far as you know, right now it's
So that's September for that one. The Newsweek article was January of this year.
Okay, because I've
January
heard both
of this
things.
Year, they say. Yeah,
I've heard both things be said, and so I didn't know if it was this thing where it started off as a mode and then evolved into its own game or what. But
Cyberpunk, this is the Newsweek article again. CD Projekt Red assured investors Thursday that they recently announced release date delay would be the game's last, before offering an update on the follow-up to the game, a AAA Cyberpunk multiplayer game, temporarily titled Cyberpunk Multiplayer. So it looks like the mode evolved from September into January into its own thing.
Okay. Did you also see the news? I think this came out of the same interview with Kaczynski that they came out and announced like when the embargo is and all that stuff and how early reviewers are going to get the copies. They're very open about that.
Can you,
I'm gonna keep
reading this Newsweek article. Find that for me, because Tim turned to me yesterday and was like, "Man, crazy how open CD Projekt Red's
been."
Yeah. And I was like, "Yeah, about this next Witcher game." And he's like, "What? I didn't hear about that." I'm like, "What are you talking about?" He's like, "Oh, this review thing." I'm like, "And then this morning I looked around for it. I did not see it."
Really?
Going back to this Newsweek article, let me give credit to the writer here, Andrew Whalen. Andrew Whalen has this more to say. While Cyberpunk 2077 will be a single player RPG, a separate multiplayer release is expected in 2022. Currently, codenamed Cyberpunk Multiplayer, the game isn't a multiplayer mode for Cyberpunk 2077, but an entirely separate entity. Quote, in terms of multiplayer, one thing we need to make clear is that the AAA release we're working on in parallel to Cyberpunk 2077 is Cyberpunk Multiplayer, the person from CD Projekt Red said. Given the expected release of Cyberpunk 2077 in September and the series of events which we expect to occur after that date, 2021 appears unlikely as the release date for Cyberpunk Multiplayer. The release date of Cyberpunk Multiplayer will probably move beyond 2021, Kaczynski suggested. Little else has been announced about Cyberpunk Multiplayer, so it's as yet unclear whether the game will be set in Night City World of 2022 or have a completely different setting inspired by the Cyberpunk tabletop role-playing game. So it looks like, according to Newsweek, Cyberpunk Multiplayer is its own thing.
So this comes from Daniel Ahmad, who we trust for the most part, but I don't know where he's getting this. Yeah, but we don't know where he's getting this. I don't know where he's getting this information. But he says, he tweets, CD Projekt Red provided some comments to journalists recently, a summary of all the main points. Cyberpunk is still on track for September, has been submitted to age rating agencies. They don't expect COVID-19 to impact the game's development, but it's too early to fully comment on the impact. Reviewers will get the game weeks before the release date, with embargo set for the weekend prior to release. And then pre-orders for Cyberpunk are higher than Witcher 3 at the same point. And this was 17 hours ago.
Okay. So that must be from the same Kaczynski stuff. It just didn't get written up in these articles, and I couldn't find that in a headline anywhere. And then, yeah, Games Radar also has a thing up here from January as well, which must have been another call for CD Projekt Red. Cyberpunk 2077 multiplayer is its own AAA project and probably won't be here until 2022. So we can put that to bed. Yeah, put that baby to bed.
And the way that Daniel also phrases in a different tweet here is that a third team will work on a new single-player title, 4-year development time assumed, high-quality RPG. And so it seems like they have three teams rotating around doing things.
Okay.
So they're busy over there.
Yeah, as usual. One more you're wrong just to get out of the way. Kevin's Ass Sweat wrote in and said, Cyberpunk is a well-known series. Cyberpunk is a well-known series, including games and books just like The Witcher. Sorry if we misspoke and made it seem like that wasn't the case. Obviously, the Cyberpunk tabletop game's huge, I know. Yeah. Different year.
I think that's because we're talking about the growth of Witcher from since Witcher 2. But yeah,
I see where it is. And I was talking about how this game, you get to enter and be your own character and do your own thing. Yeah. And you're not. I'm not anchored by Geralt, right? Because Geralt's an existing character in all these different things. In this one, 2077, at least for me, coming into this game, I'm making it my own character. I'm not sure if V has ever appeared before.
No, I believe V. I'm not going to comment on
that. Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, you know what I mean? Like, knowing nothing about it, right?
Keanu Reeves' character existed before this game.
That's correct. I didn't know that.
Really cool.
What's his name? Metal Arms?
Johnny Touchdown or something.
Johnny Silverhand.
Johnny Silverhand. There you go.
Little arms.
Little arms. Johnny T-Rex arms. Number two, Kotaku's compensating reviewers with time off. This is Steven Totillo at Kotaku, who wrote a very lovely letter basically from the editor here that I have hack-jobbed. So you should go read the rest if you want more context, because it's even what I'm going to read is long, but the letter is longer itself. I digress. Steven goes, we've informally done this for a while, but we recently officially committed to a plan at Kotaku to give staff who play a game after hours for a deadline, usually for a game review, time off in exchange. Playing a game for a review is labor, pure and simple. It is too easy to lose sight of that. Sure, it sounds fun and often is, but it can also be a grind and consume an incredible amount of time. Work is work, and we should always recognize it as such, even if the work involves playing Animal Crossing before it's out or being among the first to dive into an exciting new JRPG. One of the biggest yet most mundane challenges game journalists and critics face is the time commitment necessary to cover games well. It creates immense difficulties in terms of allocating people and resources. It's also a big part of the gig. Giving people time off after a review doesn't alleviate that, but it's the right thing to do. It's inevitable that Kotaku and other outlets wind up depending on reviewers playing games into the night or across weekends. Game publishers and developers may send us review copies days before release, but that doesn't mean we can just glide through the game and comfortably write a review or other coverage of a game without some significant extension of the workday. I've always tried to spot when a staffer is ground down by the added hours they need to put in to write a review and have offered time off, but why wait for that? It should be automatic. Assign a game for review, anticipate how long it'll take to play, and plan a day or two off to compensate. I worry that not treating deadline-driven gaming as work can make a game's length, mediocrity, or poor quality feel like more of a personal aggravation than it should be. It also risks blurring already blurry lines about work-life balance. I've been there, fuming that a game I'm reviewing isn't over yet, and feeling what should be my non-work time vanishing. I've stressed over how to fit a 60-hour games into my life on top of full-time games media day job. It shouldn't be so fraught. All this said, our reviewers are pros. I've never sensed that the stress of reviewing has impacted their take on a game, but I've seen it tire them. We've been reactive to that. Finally, we're getting ahead of it. Playing games for deadline is work, and silly as that may sound to some, Lord knows we have bigger problems in the world that need fixing. I'll make sure we always treat it as such. That's best for the reviewers and is, I hope, what the readers would also want. Blessing.
Yes.
What's your take?
I think that's awesome. That's really cool. And it's one of those things where I feel like as an audience, it's kind of hard to grasp the balance of playing a game for review and what that time looks like. I know for OKB's Far Star Working, kind of funny when it came, when the conversation came up of do we do video game reviews or not. I was always like, hey, let's just not do video game reviews because those take so much time.
Sure.
Right? Like, you got to sit down, beat a game before a deadline, or beat, depending on whatever the embargo is, right? You have like a certain amount of time to beat a game, and then you write a whole thing about the game, or record a podcast about the game, or do whatever it may be. And that takes a lot of time, especially for games that are 60 hours long, right? Like, that is a gargantuan task. Like work weeks are typically, what, 40 hours?
That's supposed to be,
yeah. And so, like, you know, that's a whole work week plus a work week and a half, basically. And so the idea that, yeah, they want to compensate with PTO, like, I mean, I think that's awesome. I know working here has been pretty cool because for Ori, which has been, like, my first, like, embargoed review that I've done for Kind of Funny, it was a blessing to be able to be like, hey. It was a blessing to be able to be like, was it Tuesday where I wasn't on any shows during the day, so I was able to text you and be like, hey, you know, I'm not on any shows. I have Ori to finish. Can I work from home and beat Ori during the day? And you're like, yeah, cool. And that worked out, right? Which is a very, I think, unique position to have in the games media space, because most people aren't going to have that flexibility, especially if you're working for a site like Kotaku or IGN or GameSpot, where you are writing reviews and having to do your daily duties every day while getting this review done. Any way to compensate for that, I think, helps. I saw a tweet from Alana Pierce where she was talking about how she quote tweeted this statement and was like, hey, yeah, this is awesome. I know for IGN, like, whenever Walking Dead would come out, or a Telltale game would come out for episodes, we would have to review them over the weekend because they would always give them to us on Fridays, which meant working over the weekend. And so IGN would compensate me with a week off at the end of that, so I can go visit my family in Australia. And I think doing things like that and finding ways to compensate workers and make sure that that balance feels healthy, I think is a good thing.
Yeah, no, it's great, and it's cool to see it put in writing. Like, I would, like to hope around here, obviously, and I know you're just getting started, but the idea is that, you know, Kind of Funny, right? The idea is if you're getting your work done, like, take all the time off in the world you want, right? And when you are at wit's end or you do want to take a vacation, you know, we don't bust balls, we don't count dates, we don't, like, make you clock in, clock out kind of thing. We want you to take care of yourself and go do it. And so, yeah, like, I like walking by your desk and seeing you play games because it reminds me so much of 2007 when I started. Mm-hmm. And, like, I could play games at my desk, but I remember... You know, the longer you stick around a place, the more responsibilities you get, the more the job evolves, right? And becomes different. And I remember how at IGN I review games, but I wasn't playing them at work, right? I was on a podcast, I was on a video, I was doing this thing, I was running around, I was trying to answer emails. Like, I wasn't playing the game for review I needed to, so I needed to start booking time out. But then even then it would be go home and play, you know, from 6 to midnight, go to bed, wake up, go to work, do it again, and come back.
Yeah.
And it was a similar thing at IGN, to their credit for me, too, where it was that IGN, you know, had at the time corporate overlords, does still, you know, is part, has owners, but when I was there, the way it worked with your EIC or whoever your boss was very much like, cool, yeah, you're busting your ass, go ahead. Like, I'm going to take Friday off. All right, cool. Don't put in a day. Like, you can sit on your PTO days. Like, we understand that you went above and beyond. You know, you get a comp day, basically, for working at PAX for 4 days and coming back and not having a Monday or a weekend. Go ahead and take a couple days off.
Yeah.
Like, usually people do it really well. But, of course, obviously, I think you run into that thing as if it's not expressed publicly, is it real? Is that a real thing that everybody knows, right? It's the same thing of, you know, we'll talk about Crunch here in Required Reading with Jason Schreier's article. But even, you know, not putting the gun to somebody's head and saying you have to work here all night long, right? You have to stay to 9 or whatever is one thing, but when the boss doesn't leave or doesn't take time off or whatever, right? Then there is that optics issue of people looking at that and be like, well, if he doesn't do it or they don't do it, why should I not do it? You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I know probably a lot of people are probably like hearing this new story and they're probably like these are video games, like, you know,
totally.
These are hobbies, but at the same time, like, half the games we've played for the PS Love You segment, the 104 games ranked, I'd say probably half the games I've played for that segment were probably bad games. And playing bad games for your job is work.
Oh, totally.
like that. I mean, it's not like hard work, right? It's not like I'm lifting something.
We know many of you are listening doing real manual labor,
doing like
real different jobs.
Actual work. But it is one of those things where it's like, I don't, like, when I'm playing bad games, I'm like, I don't want to play this. But I'm doing it because I want to be able to do my job well.
And that's the thing. Like, I always talk about, you know, when I started at IGN and we reviewed everything. And I reviewed games I should have never reviewed because I had no background in them and I didn't like that genre to begin with. But it was the idea of what you're talking about. I'll never forget Valhalla Knights 2 on PSP. Being home on a Saturday, and it was a giant JRPG, right? It was a giant RPG. I'm pretty sure it was JRPG. Mm-hmm. And I had to sit there for like my entire Saturday and Sunday playing this thing. And I remember hating it because it was, I want to play something else.
Yeah.
Right? I want to do whatever. Like, you know, now it's fun that we're, you know, diversifying reviews enough. Ori and the Will of the Wisp review up right now.
Yeah.
YouTube.com/kindoffunnygames.
Is it up because we're having some issues with it?
I just refreshed here. I'm playing it on my site.
Okay.
Barrett, is it good?
I came in, deleted the original that YouTube decided to eat for no apparent reason.
This isn't our fault. YouTube sucks.
Yep. They've been fucking with our uploads a lot this last week. So, right. Yeah, it's re-uploaded. It's good. Gamescast is live.
Go get Will of the Wisps and watch that. A great crew of characters, right? It's Tim, Blessing, Imran, and Snowbike Mike talking about it. But, not, like, as we have such a nice pool of people playing stuff, right? Like, I'm in a similar thing right now where, first off, it's like an embarrassment of riches, all the games we have right now, right? It's so, but it's this thing of, like, there's, like, I don't need to be on the next big review that we're doing or whatever. And so I was like, I want to just play The Division. I'm like, I'm just going to play The Division. And like, maybe this weekend I'll try the other games and I'll get into them and see what happens. But if not, we have people who are playing the other thing and I don't need to play
The Division. Yeah, and that's like playing Ori over the weekend, I started to get that feeling of like, man, I wish I was doing something else. Because Ori, fantastic game.
Yeah.
But Ori also gets difficult in certain places. Sure. And
you want to take time off. You want to walk away from it.
Yeah, you want to walk away from it. You want to come back to it. And playing that game in long stretches, there are places where you get stuck because the game has a lot of puzzles and has a lot of like environmental exploration. And you kind of have to take your time to figure out what is going on. How do I get to the next part of this game?
Yeah.
That can get very frustrating when you are stuck in a moment for an hour and you're playing that game on a deadline. That takes out all the fun out of it.
The amount of games I've done for reviews where everything's going, you're doing great, and you hit a wall.
Yeah.
And you're like, what the fuck am I supposed to do? It becomes so much more aggravating because it is that thing of, I only have 4 hours set aside tonight. I don't have time to waste. I've had that conversation in my head so many different times. And I think that's one of the things I bolded in Totillo's article or letter here, which again, you should go read because there's even more to it. I bolded this. I worry that not treating deadline-driven gaming as work can make a game's length, mediocrity, or poor quality feel like more of a personal aggravation than it should be.
Yeah.
It also risks blurring the already blurry lines between work-life balance. Throughout the work-life balance part, treating deadline-driven work, not treating it as work can make the game length, mediocrity, or poor quality feel more aggravating than usual. For me, that encapsulates what I think we saw with Days Gone.
Mm-hmm.
Where, again, I don't think Days Gone is a bad game. I think it's a mediocre game from when we reviewed and stuff. And everybody's always like, it's been patched. It's done this. I'm like, yes, but my problem was that I ran into the same bandit camp every time. And when I discovered I didn't need to shoot them, if I ran up on them, they didn't shoot me fast enough. Their animations were canned. I could just beat everybody up with the table leg with the buzzsaw blade in it, right? That mediocrity I felt was compounded by the fact that I had to do it over and over and over and over again in a weekend stretch to get that. And talking to other reviewers, it felt like that as well, where it was that, how is this game not over yet?
Yeah.
And you'd get to what you thought the ending was, and it wasn't the ending. Like, holy fucking shit, it's 50 hours of this? I remember that feeling, and I keep talking about what an awesome, interesting case study Days Gone is, where the reviews were all like that, but then it seems like the majority of players who are vocal about it
really dug that game.
And I wonder if it was that, if you could play Days Gone at your own pace and just put in an hour or two here and there and do whatever you want, you're just having fun in this sandbox world and getting new gadgets and new weapons and exploring and killing freakers.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting that I think that there is something to be said for that. I don't know if a day off does that, because there is still a what the fuck.
Yeah, you're still in a deadline, but
that's always the interesting thing about game reviews that are done like that, is like, even if it is like, all right, well, cool, it made the game's weak points stand out more. Well, there's still weak points. And even though it's condensed, and I've seen 50 hours in 100 hours, right, if that makes sense. I've seen 50 hours in what was 100 hours rather than 50 hours in 3 months of time.
Yeah.
Those are still the problems, and that still should be rated that way. And you can still have, you know, Tim's always swimming in sevens. You can still have fun with a game that's just good, that's just okay.
For sure.
I digress. Number three. Let's talk about Good Guy Discord. They put out this statement on their Twitter. In light of COVID-19, we're temporarily upping the go live streaming and screen share limit from 10 to 50 people for the next few months. We know a lot of you around the world are currently using Discord to keep in touch and perform daily tasks, from keeping up with classes to working from home. We want to help make your world a little less stressful. We'll keep this limit up while it's most critically needed. Please have patience with us and as performance issues may arise in streams with a large number of people.
That's awesome.
Great stuff.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think Discord is one of those, I don't use it because I don't play multiplayer games that way. Yeah. You know what I mean? And I also just don't, like, I have enough message boards and things, and every time I go in there, I'm confused because I'm an old person with technology.
Yeah, I use it mainly for, to socialize with people. I know for when I was doing OKBeast for Kind of Funny, right, that was, like, a good place for our community to kind of come together and just, whenever there'd be video game news, people would share it in there and talk about it and have a good time. And then, like, there'd be certain Discord communities where I'd come through and hang out and go into voice chat and be talking to 8 people, and it'd be a great way to just sit, chill, have a good time, and feel like it really is like, you know, you feel like you're hanging out with your friends in a circle or whatever, but via Discord. I never used it for more than 10 to 50 people, but this seems like it's more aimed towards classrooms or workplaces.
Totally. And that's the one thing that I've seen with Discord is that when it got introduced to me, it was such a gamer tool for gamers. And we're, you know, it is communities and it is chat channels for Destiny and it is this thing. And like, okay, I get all that. But I have seen a shift in the industry of people actually using it for work and it being like basically Slack, where it is you're going in there and having these conversations and then being able to video call people and be able to do this different stuff. So
yeah, good for them.
Really good for them, yeah. Number 4 on the Roper Report, Ubisoft's up to something, everybody. Not groundbreaking by any stretch of the imagination, but they're doing 2 cool things with old properties. Barrett, would you mind playing this trailer while I talk about it? The first, ladies and gentlemen, is a little game called For Honor.
Whoa.
You might have heard it, where you go fight. You know, remember
the game with the swords?
It is. Remember that one? Yeah, the E3 presentation, guy with the cane and the big beard. They introduced today Blades of Persia. It is a Prince of Persia crossover. Chapter 1 is available right now. Chapter 2 will drop on March 19th. Barrett's tossing up the trailer.
Did you ever try For Honor?
Yeah.
Did you like it?
I did not dig... Can they hear it? They don't need to hear it. Or is it just balanced where we can talk over it and not be the end of the world? I played it. We did, a sponsored stream at the very beginning of it. Mm-hmm. I never dug the group battles. There's the prince. What up? I never dug the group battles, but I really like the one-on-one stuff. And so, in group battles, you'd get into one-on-one fights, but you could also then go and, like, play solo stuff and run around that way. I did that, but as with every live service Ubisoft game, that was at launch, and I know it's been rebooted and revitalized 15 times since then.
That was my thing too, where I played it. I want to say I played the beta, and I was like, I can see some of the fun in this, but it seems like it kind of has a journey to go through before it becomes great. And I would like to return to it after to see what it is, because I know the community's been like growing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's one of those, like, and that's what I always commend Ubisoft, but other live service providers with, right, is that they stuck with it and they did find the fun and they did find a community.
Yeah,
and
this looks really cool.
Yeah, of course. I love that. And I mean, Ubisoft has such a rich catalog of IP to draw from. It's cool to see them doing stuff in it. Speaking of, Gregway, the next one, Assassin's Creed Odyssey. Barrett, can you click on that link and show it to them as well? Steven Totila, who might as well come just write this show. I guess email me all the articles from Kotaku and his Twitter. Put this one up today. Apparently, over on the gear store for Assassin's Creed Odyssey in-game, Ezio's robes have popped up for some kind of community activities. There'll be a reward there through the UB Club to go get Ezio's outfits and get in there and kill it. Barrett, what's that do for you?
I'm going through the series right now, and this is like kind of a typical thing where other characters' robes are available in like the game that you're playing. Like, I'm playing Black Flag on Switch, which just came out on Switch like a couple months ago. So like a bunch of new people sets, like you can get Ezio's or Alexios's set in there. You can get Ezio's set in there and stuff like that. And I'm like, I don't really care.
You don't dig it?
No, because like when I'm playing the Assassin's Creed game that I'm playing, I want to fit the vibe of the character that I'm playing and stuff. Like, I'm playing as Edward Kenway. I want him to be a pirate. I don't want Ezio's Ezio, you know, like. I wish I
could help you, but my Cassandra looks like Wonder Woman, and it's awesome.
Well, that's because those are sets from the game itself.
Yeah.
It's not like we're dressing up Cassandra as Ezio, you know?
Yeah.
Because my
That's a cool change it up, man.
Yeah, that's right.
I got to get back at some point.
I know. I'm excited. I'm excited to go back to it, because like you guys were saying earlier, of like talking about playing games a lot for work, I only played Odyssey within a span of 2 weeks for 80 hours. I was doing that all at home to be able to get to stuff that I could record at IGN.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was like 80 hours on top of my already 40 hour.
And correct me if I'm wrong. Like, you're the opposite, right? So when you came in like after all that hard work, Pear like put cigarettes out on you, right? And like made you work more.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that sucks, man. Glad we got you. You know.
I know. I know you saved me.
Don't ever fucking forget it. Don't ever fucking forget it.
Oh God.
We're only playing Division again. You did that.
I was hot on it for a second.
I know. Like, Let's do it, dude. It's so good.
Dude, Black Flag is so good.
Black Flag, hey, dude, no argument there. I ain't gonna search it. I'm Black Flag,
dude. I'm just like fucking sailing around, listening to sea shanties, fucking up.
I love that everyone in this office is playing
old,
brand
games.
New, amazing embargoed shit. And Barrett's like, I'm playing all the Zeldas and all the Assassin's Creeds. We love you, Barrett.
Love you too.
Come back to Division. Come on.
I'll try.
Kevin never will, you know. Number five, yet another audio-video asset for you to click on and show. Lego plus Mario has been revealed.
Whoa.
I'm
going
to read from their press release. Everybody hold on to your horses. It's just what we kind of thought. Neither a video game nor a traditional Lego brick-based set, Lego Super Mario is a new product line that features an interactive Lego Mario figure who collects coins in real-life game levels created with Lego bricks. The new line will let kids experience the playful world of Super Mario like never before. Super Mario will be brought to life in the physical Lego world, and new levels of challenge and styles of play will be part of the iconic Lego experience enjoyed by generations. The news was also with this trailer, watch right now. The video, which hints at what fans can expect when Lego Super Mario launches later this year, shows a player using an interactive Mario figure to collect coins in real-life game levels that have been created with the Lego bricks. And they got the noises in there. He's got his hearts. He goes woohoo when he touches shit.
I love it so much.
Really?
Yeah. No, this is doing everything.
Oh wow! Okay.
Like, I've never really cared about Legos that much growing up as a kid. Like, Legos were never really something I got passionate about.
Yeah.
I do love Mario. And seeing the way they did it, where it is like, as I guess it's like what LED or whatever, like the animations are on his face and that show like the coins and all the stuff going on in the level. I think that stuff is really cool, really awesome. And it's like nice to see that Mario is like universal and timeless.
Yeah,
of
course.
Mario has like stayed with us and has never really gotten stale.
Yeah.
Except for like New Super Mario Brothers, but like kids don't care. That, like, yeah. But like overall, Mario is a franchise and as a character, like still awesome.
Kicking it.
Yeah, still kicking it.
Yeah, for me, I mean, I wouldn't buy these to begin with all due respect.
Mm-hmm.
So for looking at the thing, I'm just like, well, how much is it? Isn't the thing about Legos being able to assemble
like
them into
thing.
Anything you want? Like, in any layout. But, like, you look at that, it's like, that seems like a pretty prepackaged, like...
But, like, you're assembling, like, a level, it seems.
If, yeah, if you can... And that I did notice at the end it says multiple sets shown.
Mm-hmm.
So you assume you can get levels and mix and match and do whatever. That's cool.
And then, you had, like... I know you're not a kid anymore, Greg. But there's this thing that kids have called imagination.
Sure,
and they're going to use that and like go through. If I had this as a kid, oh my God,
your life would be totally different.
At 7 years old, I had so much imagination.
Yeah, not so much now.
Dude, we would have taken Mario on so many different adventures.
Dude,
and he would have been hanging out with like Star Wars characters.
If they released like a Zelda set, also, I would like mix and match and be like, okay, Zelda, you're gonna be like, or not Zelda, okay, Link, you're gonna be like jumping through the levels.
I know Zelda jumping through the levels.
I know you can do that in Super Mario Maker 2.
Yeah, why didn't you play that?
Yeah.
Because this requires the imagination.
Gotcha.
Imagination.
Okay. Imagination. Everybody look for those soon. How soon? I don't know. The press release didn't tell me. I didn't see it. Did JBL see it? I didn't see it. I was gonna use it to actually transition over to the list, right? Because that's a good transition. But then I was like, wait, that's kind of key.
Yeah, whenever it comes out, it's so far away, though.
Please find a full announcement here. Later this year. Launching later this year is what they gave you. Yeah, that's all they said. That's a shitty thing. Give me a real date. I hate that.
Do they give a price? I might buy this for my nephew.
Because
this is the predicament I'm facing.
I'm hearing it.
I've been talking to my sister, my oldest sister, who has two kids now.
Uh-huh.
Her oldest is 4 years old. Five? Four? I'm a horrible uncle.
You're a bad uncle.
But he's old enough to where I'm like, I could get you like a 2DS or a Switch. Maybe not a Switch because he's kind of reckless, but like maybe I can get you some kind of video game thing.
2DS for sure.
And my sister's like, I don't know if I want to get him into video games too early. And I'm kind of trying to push against it. Maybe like a Mario Lego set could help, like, usher that in.
Sure, yeah.
You know,
start them small, kind of like how McDonald's Happy Meal toys get you into. Yeah, you know what I mean.
Maybe I can do that.
No prices available later this year. That sucks, and it's so far away. Blessing. If I wanted information that wasn't far away and was more recent, say what came to the mom and grop shops today, where would I go?
The official list of upcoming software across each and every platform, as listed by the Kinda Funny Games Daily Show host each and every weekday.
Yeah. Out today. Neon City Riders on PlayStation 4, Xbox One, Switch, and PC. Bless Unleashed on Xbox One.
Now, can people stop tagging me in everything? Regarding, this has been happening year and a half.
If I have to get tagged in every fucking Batman...
You made your own bet on that.
You care about
Batman. You made your own bet on that, all right?
Care
this
about
is his
Batman.
Name.
Bless Unleashed just exists, and I didn't know about
it. I mean, he could
change
his name, I'm just saying.
I guess
saying.
I could change my name.
DJ Max Respect 5 comes to PC.
I'm gonna change my name to DJ Max.
Hidden Through Time comes to PlayStation 4 and PC, which, by the way, ding, 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 Hidden Through Time, the one I picked is my PlayStation Network 104 games. It's basically a Where's Waldo.
Really?
In a video game form, where it shows things at the bottom. It's like, where are these in the photo? I'm like, yes, please. I can't wait to find it. Brotherhood United on Switch. Hidden in Plain Sight on Switch. Which is different than the other one, all right? In Bento on Switch. Half Past Fate, Switch and PC. Street Cat's Tale on Switch. Nin Nin Days on Switch. Mystic Veil on Switch. Shield Maiden on PC. Covert on PSVR. Rico gets its breakout DLC now. I don't know why I said right now. Round Guard, which did not make any list that I saw, but Tony Baraka wrote in to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames and says, out today's spotlight! Today, Wonder Belly Games releases their new game, Round Guard, for PC, Switch, and Xbox One. PS4 is in the future. And I wanted to highlight it for one specific reason. This is a Tim Gettys-ass video game.
Oh, man.
Round Guard is Peggle meets a roguelike fantasy RPG. Think of it as a medieval pachinko with story and replayability. Pick your character class, warrior, mage, etc., to determine your strengths and special ability. And shoot your circular hero through a pachinko level where you have to complete quests to advance. If you fail or die, you keep the gold you've accrued to power up your next runs. For those of you, like Tim, wanting an addictive Peggle sequel, try Round Guard. It's out today. P.S. I don't work for nor received anything from Wonder Belly Games. I'm just excited for a Peggle-like game after years of not having one. Thanks, Tony Baraka. Tony Baraka, thank you. I love Peggle. This sounds awesome. I will be buying this.
Nice.
100%. I'm in. And then Animal Crossing Pocket Camp Island Excursion Invite Event has started. Fans can prepare for the release of Animal Crossing New Horizons game for the Nintendo Switch system with the newly added Island Excursion Invite Event in Animal Crossing Pocket Camp for smartphone devices. From now until April 1st, players can get an early taste of that relaxing island lifestyle with special in-game events themed after Animal Crossing New Horizon. Participate in Nook Inc's fishing tournament to earn in-game rewards for your campsite, catch some crawly critters featured in Animal Crossing New Horizons, and craft stylish island-themed walls and flooring decor among many fun-themed activities.
Do you feel like the crossover between Animal Crossing Pocket Camp and New Horizons is what you'd expect given, like, back in the day, or not even back in the day.
I already know where you're going with the question. Yeah. When this launched, when Pocket Camp launched, not at all.
Really? It's not enough?
I thought for sure when Pocket Camp launched, when we were all started playing it, you're like, oh, it's kind of basic. I remember putting it down and being like, I'll come back to it when we're closer to the next Animal Crossing, because I'm sure I'll be able to bring X, Y, or Z over, and you cannot. In fact, I think it goes the opposite, right? Where they said in that direct, where things I do in New Horizons, I'll be able to bring. I'm like, what the fuck? No, I don't want that at all. Like, let me get my bells started. Let me get, you know, no. So, yeah, like, they said all that, and I was like, huh. Didn't even touch it. And I haven't talked to Joey about it, because I remember a couple months ago, Joey was so desperate for her fix. Mm-hmm. She started playing Pocket Camp again, and then nothing. She gets nothing for it. New dates for you. Comanche starts into early access today. I copied the press release title, sorry. Comanche is in early access today. Good Goliath will be launching on PlayStation VR, Oculus, and Vive starting March 31st. Deals of the day for you. We have some new Epic Game Store freebies. These are available until March 19th. You can get Anodyne 2, A Short Hike, and Mutazone.
I know quite a few people that love A Short Hike.
Dude, when we were talking Game of the Year, people talk this thing up nonstop.
I know Alex Van Aken really loves A Short Hike.
Well, it's free now. You can get it on the Epic Game Store. And then March 19th to the 26th, you'll be able to get the Stanley Parable and Watch Dogs.
Stanley Parable is great. I love Stanley Parable.
You know what else is great?
What's that?
Reader Mail. Now it's time for Reader Mail. You can write into patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, where you can get the show ad-free. And speaking of ads, Greg Way, this episode of Kind of Funny Games Daily is brought to you by Upstart. As most of us have found out the hard way, getting into debt is easy, getting out is hard, especially if your credit score isn't great. Thankfully, now there's Upstart.com, the revolutionary lending platform that knows you're more than just your credit score and offers smarter interest rates to help you pay off high-interest credit card debt. You know it, when I moved to SF, I needed to take out a loan because I had a whole bunch of shit shit to pay off, and it had a terrible, terrible interest rate, Upstart would have helped me, because Upstart goes beyond the traditional credit score when assessing your credit worthiness. They actually reward you based on your education and job history in the form of smarter interest rates. Upstart believes you're more than just your credit score. They believe in you. They make it fast, simple, and easy to check your rate. Since it's just a soft pull, it won't affect your credit score. The hard pull happens if you accept the rate. The best part, once your loan is approved and accepted, most people get their funds the very next business day. Over 400,000 people have used Upstart to pay off credit cards or meet their financial goals. Free yourself from the burden of high-interest credit card debt by consolidating everything into one monthly payment with Upstart. See why Upstart is top-ranked in their category with a 4.9 out of 5 rating on Trustpilot, and hurry to upstart.com/KFGames to find out how low your Upstart rate is. Checking your rate takes only a few minutes. That's upstart.com/KFGames. Up next is Mint Mobile. If you're still using one of the big wireless providers this year, have you asked yourself what you're paying for? Between expensive retail stores, inflated prices, and hidden fees, you're being taken advantage of because they know you'll pay. Enter Mint Mobile. Mint Mobile provides the same premium network coverage you're used to, but at a fraction of the cost because everything is online. Mint Mobile saves on retail locations and overhead, then passes the savings on to you! Tim got this for his mom because he noticed that she was paying for all sorts of bells and whistles that she wasn't using. Why? Mint Mobile makes it easy to cut your wireless bill down to just $15 a month. Every plan comes with unlimited nationwide talk and text. With Mint Mobile, stop paying for unlimited data you'll never use. Choose between plans with 3, 8, or 12 gigabytes of 4G LTE data. It was that thing where I knew I said it wrong to begin with, and I'm like, oh, I can flip this, and I couldn't flip it. Use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan, and keep the same phone number along with all your existing contacts. Ditch your old wireless bill and start saving with Mint Mobile. To get your new wireless plan for just $15 a month and get the plan shipped to your door for free, go to mintmobile.com/games. That's mintmobile.com/games. Cut your wireless bill down to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/games. Finally, it's Brooklinen. Myself, Tim, and so many more of the Kinda Funny members only sleep on Brooklinen sheets because they're the most comfortable sheets in the world. Be like us. You know Brooklinen is the internet's favorite sheets, but they're also home to bedding, loungewear, towels, and more with over 50,000 five-star reviews and counting. I love them because, of course, they are soft, they're beautiful, and they were easy to mix and match online and impress my wife. Brooklinen was the first direct-to-consumer bedding company. They work directly with manufacturers and directly with customers. No middlemen, so just a great price and service and product. All luxury products without the luxury markup. They've moved beyond the bedroom to offer bathroom and life essentials. Towels, shower curtains, bath mats, robes, and candles to add that extra lavish touch. Even ultra-soft loungewear making you feel like you never left the bed. Brooklinen.com is the perfect place to start making small changes that make a big difference. Brooklinen is so confident in their product that all their sheets, comforters, loungewear, and towels come with a lifetime warranty. Go on, make yourself comfortable. Get 10% off your first order and free shipping when you use the promo code GAMES only at brooklinen.com. That's brooklinen.com, promo code GAMES. And, hey, New Yorkers, if you're listening, you can get the internet's favorite sheets and more in real life. Visit Brooklinen's first store in Brooklyn at 127 Kent Avenue in Williamsburg. Brooklinen, everything you need to live your most comfortable life. Blessing.
Yes.
We go to reader mail. We find Tommy Boy, who wrote in to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, just like you can to be part of the show, get the ad-free show, and get the post-show exclusive each and every day. Tommy Boy says, hey guys, with E3 shifting to an all-digital offer, and it being the age of streaming, is it time to move what would be hands-on demos to streaming platforms? My understanding of the reason you wouldn't traditionally release an E3 demo for home use is that users could crack and data mine the demos. But with streaming, that wouldn't be possible. Is E3 the time for Microsoft to flex its xCloud muscle and show everyone what it's capable of? And more importantly, could Stadia come to the rescue and host third-party demos?
I feel like where we're at currently, that would be very complicated. I think, one, the issue with streaming is that it's still in a place where it's not all the way there yet as far as latency.
Yeah. Right?
There have been some services that have, you know, gotten it further than where it has been, but still I feel like developers would want their games to be demoed in the best way to play it, and so far streaming is not the best way to play video games.
Imagine you have a platform or a Twitch-based shooter that you are streaming that way, and as us, the people playing it online, to talk to the audience about it. Mm-hmm. It is that thing of, yep, it didn't feel perfect, but that might have been streaming. Yeah. I don't know. Like, and then it did totally stutter. It did totally crash. I don't know.
Yeah, that's the. I feel like that's already been the conversation whenever we do demo things that are streaming. Like, I remember demoing Doom Eternal on Google Stadia at PAX West and being like, man, yeah, like the game's really cool. And there are like some stutters, but I don't know if that was the game or if that was Stadia, right? And I feel like that conversation would come into play if demoing moved right now into the streaming space.
Yeah.
I think also like there's different platforms and how they would handle it. And so Xbox, for sure, for Xbox games, they would stream via xCloud. But I don't know if PlayStation would really want to go that route for if they have exclusive games that they want to demo, because that's not necessarily where their biggest focus is at. Whereas for Xbox, xCloud is a thing that they're pushing in that way. Google Stadia, obviously, like all their things are streaming, so that can work for them in a way. It's not going to work for others. But then you get into like third parties, and it's like, okay, Ubisoft. Does Ubisoft create their own proprietary streaming platform, or do they move to xCloud, or do they go with Nvidia, or like if they want to show off a game on PlayStation, how are they going to go about that? Like, what does that then look like? I feel like right now things are way too complicated to say. And even like in the future, I don't know if that would, I feel like that wouldn't necessarily work, right? I feel like publishers and studios and developers would still prefer flying press out to come play their game at a site rather than demoing through a stream, because there's just so much complications there.
I don't think you'll see this happen at this E3. I think you'll have a better shot at this happening at the Game Awards, whatever that is.
Yeah.
And then in the wake of 2020 and how weird this year has been, I think next year's E3 is when you'd really see the return of demos and stuff. I say this, yeah, the data mining thing you're talking about, Tommy Boy, is a huge issue, right? I think that there's going to be solutions to that. I think that everybody's probably on their heels right now trying to figure out how to save E3, and they weren't anticipating this being canceled this way, so they aren't ready. The biggest thing, I think, and I talked about this a bit yesterday, and again, I'm Greg Miller. I'm a complete moron. I only know what I've personally experienced and the few things I've talked to with developers, right? The demo you play at a PAX, the demo you play at an E3 is not optimized at all to go onto a store. It's running on different hardware, whether that be a giant dev kit PS4, which is basically just a computer, whether it be, in the best case scenario, a PS4 or PS4 test kit, which we have in the other room but no longer use, really, right? Mm-hmm. In my day and age as an old man, remember, it was that, like, when I started at IGN, my desk was nonstop hardware. It was a monitor, it was a PSP, it was my PlayStation 2, it was my PlayStation 2 test kit, it was my PS3, it was my PS3 test kit. And the test kits could run burned disks. So what would happen for review codes is you would get a manila envelope that you would open and open it up, and there'd just be a burned disk, and on it would be written, you know, Persona 4 or whatever, and you'd pop it in and play it. Then as we went digital, PS3 started for me, and again, I'm sure this is similar to Xbox. We'd have to get McCaffrey on to talk about it. I was obviously on the PlayStation team in this era. You know, you get PKG files that you would put onto a USB that you plug into the PS3 and then down, you know, copy over there. Same thing for my PlayStation 4 test kit now. You do that, you plug it in, you copy over the thing, and you do it that way. The PKGs are used for the most part as internal test builds. We're taking it to a live show, or you're going to down to PlayStation and you're going to play them there. Test kits, like, and sharing demos and stuff is so rare these days. And it'll happen when we have an indie come by that want to show something. It's easier to send it that way. But it's so rare to have that anymore that test kit, I would say, that we've had since starting Kinda Funny in 2015 for the PlayStation 4, we've used less than 10 times. You know what I mean? Like, we just don't use it that way. And so when we take it to the example, I'm taking you on a very long road to get to, I don't think the PKGs and the files and the stuff they're doing right now are optimized or even available to run on a retail PlayStation 4 or Xbox One. I think that is a special kind of build that is not going to be prepared, that you could flip a switch and say, all right, there's no E3, we still want to put out this demo, let's do it that way. Mm-hmm. And so I think even for streaming, and this is where I'm really out and talking out my ass, but I think I'm right, they talk about that, the Xbox Ones that are in the cloud for Xbox, right, are the Supers, Beefiest, Azure, all this jazz. But they're talking about them being retail Xboxes. They're not talking about them being Xbox test kits. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, as not being a developer or a smart man what the difference is there. But I think it's the same thing that even this sounds awesome, Tommy. I agree with you. That'd be awesome to see Xbox be like, let's fucking flip some switches and do it there, and everybody can just stream it and try this game out. I'm not saying it's beyond the realm of possibility that could happen at this E3 showcase, or this E3 showcase, I guess. Mm-hmm. I just don't think they were planning on that, so I don't know if they're ready. If they were planning, sure. For Stadia, what you're talking about is the exact same thing, right? For Stadia, that would be an amazing idea that Google hasn't gotten basic arithmetic right yet with Google Stadia, let alone to get into long division. You know what I mean? Like, they haven't figured out, like, a consistent pipeline of new games yet. They don't have a reason for you to jump into Stadia and do this thing. And then, you know, you just talked about it yesterday, like Doom Eternal is not true 4K or whatever. It's just like, they keep stepping on all the rakes in their front lawn. They aren't ready to jump. If Stadia had come out and been awesome and everybody accepted it, that would be, you're 100% right.
And I can see them in that case, approaching Google Stadia, approaching maybe PlayStation or approaching Steam or approaching different companies and being like, hey, we'll handle this for you in this meantime while demoing games is becoming like, you can't have everybody come to E3 or come to events to demo the PS5, for example. We'll step in and do that for you. I think that is where we're at now as far as the new consoles coming out makes that super difficult too.
Totally.
Because now, like, you have boxes that you want people to have their hands on and really be able to test out, and doing that through streaming is not really an adequate way to do that, because not that, like, believability isn't there. Like, not that if PlayStation were like, hey, we're gonna stream this since we don't want people to come out, like, I feel like that's just a weird thing. I feel like it'd be more likely for a PlayStation to send consoles as opposed to, like, having people do that through internet.
I don't know, it'll be interesting to see how it all does. Streaming could be a really great viable solution, but I don't think it'll be a solution in 2020. I think that's something you do in 2021, because you have to build out so many different things for that. Blessing.
Yes.
Let's kick up our heels. Squad up, take the bench. Today it's a required reading. Jason Schreier at Kotaku put up an article today. As Naughty Dog crunches on The Last of Us 2, developers wonder how much longer this approach can last. As always with required reading, we won't read the entire article. We're telling you to go over to Kotaku, read this article from Jason. However, I will read to you the first three graphs.
The link is in the description below.
The link is in the description below.
Yeah.
Do you want to throw the article up too?
Yeah.
Just for visual aids. One Friday night last month, some artists at the video game studio Naughty Dog were working on their latest game when they heard a crash. A large metal pipe had fallen from above them and landed right next to their desks. If it had dropped a few feet closer, the consequences might have been dire. It was late, past 9 p.m., and the construction workers above had perhaps recklessly assumed that nobody was there. But at Naughty Dog, people were always there. The owners of the building reacted quickly, firing the construction team, hiring a new one, and installing new safety measures to ensure that an accident like that wouldn't happen again. To some Naughty Dog employees, however, it was emblematic of an unhealthy culture. The type of environment where a late-night construction accident might take place while people were still at the office. The Last of Us Part 2, the studio's new PlayStation 4 game about people trying to survive in a post-apocalyptic United States, will be out on May 29. Today, as many of the developers at Naughty Dog put in nights and weekends at the office to finish the game, some continue to ask themselves a question that has haunted the studio for years. Is it worth it? As one Naughty Dog developer recently told me, this game is really good, but at a huge cost to the people. Obviously, again, head over there, read this. It's another one, Schreier, with a whole bunch of different sources from Naughty Dog talking about what it's like to work there, what's going on. Fascinating read.
Yeah, I read most of it. It's a very long article, and so I wasn't able to finish it before the show started. But it seems like a lot of it was the fact that, like, or a lot of the issues there stem from the things that we've kind of talked about in the industry over the last few years of culture, and how even if it's not mandated, like overtime isn't mandated, it is still supported through things like, hey, like this animator here is working on a thing, or let's say I'm an animator and I need to get this thing done for another employee who needs my animation in order to do their job, but I'm not going to finish it until like 11 p.m. So they have to stay until 11 p.m.
Right.
It's small, like, ripple effects like that, and a lot of cases like that that are then causing for people to have to crunch and people to have to stay late, and then through that they are then losing a lot of employees. It sucks.
It's what Jason talks about in the article too, right? This idea that somehow for Naughty Dog and the people he's talking to, this crunch culture is so wrapped up in what makes Naughty Dog Naughty Dog,
yeah,
and what makes their games 10 out of 10s, and what makes them the front runner, obviously, for first party studios, let alone probably the industry and what you can accomplish.
He references like the small details, like shooting a bag of grain and then that grain falling out of the bag, right?
Yeah.
Like that small detail, or small details like that, then feed into the whole culture and like the ways in which he talks about, like, okay, is this worth it, or like how does this level of detail then affect our workers, and like how do they strike that balance? And it seems like there might not even be a way to strike that balance, which is something that kind of sucks. But yeah, people should read this article. I think it goes into some really revealing like things about
and interesting topics of discussion.
I think,
you know what I mean. That's where Gondor's Condor writes in. Of course, a Squad Up success story. Wrote into me to let me know how. Email me. Let me know how well it went from Squad Up and Up. I digress. This time, Gondor's Condo wrote in patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. It says, "Greetings, Kind of Funny team. Jason Schreier has struck again, this time illustrating Naughty Dog's crunch culture. This is at least the third article pertaining to AAA crunch culture since the end of 2018, starting with Rockstar on Red Dead 2 and BioWare with Anthem. How do you morally reconcile playing these video games, and how can we try to make it better for developers, no matter how small of a movement? Bless, you're new here, since these crunch stories.
Yeah.
I feel like I've talked about crunch a long time on a lot of these episodes.
Mm-hmm.
How do you reconcile it?
I mean, for playing the game specifically, this is a thing I've talked about a little bit on the show already, but for me, when it comes to the choice of not playing a video game versus playing a video game because of studio culture or because of bad actors at certain studios, like for me, the thing that I always try to keep in mind is that even the people that are experiencing crunch, the workers that are experiencing crunch, they don't hate the game. Now, granted, there are some quotes in there that are like, oh, yeah, some people want the game. Like, some people dislike this experience so much that they want the game to fail. Like, there are those people there. But then there are also people that do work on this thing and do have passion for it. Like, that's why you have those details in there. Like, when you shoot the bag and the grain of salt flies out. Or, like, the when you're hiding behind covers, Nathan Drake, and the cover disintegrates as people are shooting at it. Like, those are layers of love for a lot of people. And for me, like, I try to not disregard the fact that so many people have put in so much hard work into a thing. In some cases, I feel bad about like being like, oh, I'm not gonna play this because I don't want to support this developer, despite people working here actually being passionate about this thing. So that's kind of how I reconcile it, is by recognizing that, like, you know, a studio is more than the issues with the studio, and the studio is made of people, and those people oftentimes, you know, love their work, love the studio,
love
all this stuff. As far as like how do we try to make it better for these developers, I think being vocal, I think, you know, articles like this help people, being vocal on social media, or, you know, being vocal in comments and being like, then don't be toxic, right? Don't come out and like cuss out developers, and don't come out and be an idiot on the internet, but be vocal about, hey, like, we want good for developers. Bringing stuff like this up whenever you can, and making sure people are aware of what's going on, I think is really the best that we can do as an audience. And so that's kind of where I fall on it.
Yeah, 100%. Right, is I think that crunch has been part of the industry for so long that it's not obviously a light switch you get to flip and be over with it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's so many different arguments to it and what constitutes crunch. From, you know, I still think we play fast and loose with crunch, where I think some people, you know, oh, man, they say crunch like it's a badge of honor. And it's like there's crunch and there's mandated crunch. You know what I mean? There's crunch that you want to be there till 11 o'clock and work. That's when you, like, there's so many different things.
Yeah,
to
like
it.
Even reading this article, there are like certain points where I was like, okay, that doesn't seem too bad. And then I read the next line, I'm like, okay, that's bad.
Exactly. And that's the thing, right? Like, there's overtime and there's not even for Naughty Dog. I'm talking about in generals and compensations and how this all works. Like, there's things going on there. I think the biggest part of it is your nail on the head, right? Is it's multifaceted. Of like, no, these people are working on this game because they love it. They want it to be received. They want it to be successful. I'm not going to not play it because they crunched. I am going to talk about the fact that I don't want you to crunch. I don't want you to crunch beyond your limits. I want you, if you want to work till whatever, I think that's your right. I think that your studio, your office, your boss needs to step in and tell you, yes, no, maybe, you know, what are you doing? Get out of here, whatever, this kind of thing. Like, if that's how you're doing it, I'm not going to get into how that artist creates, because I'm not that artist, right? I don't like mandatory crunch. I don't want mandatory crunch. Yeah. I want people to have a work-life balance.
And even,
balance.
As, like, a culture. Like, I think
I want them to be rewarded for if they are having to go above
and
beyond.
Yeah, like, compensation for that for sure. Yeah. Whether it is, like, I mean, preferably, like, pay,
of
right?
Course, yeah.
Or, like, you know, letting people take time off, all that good stuff. All the stuff you need to maintain a healthy studio. It seems like a lot of this also stems from bad management in terms of, I think I read somewhere in the article about Naughty Dog not hiring producers in order to and them encouraging the workers to be their own producers, right? And what a producer would do in a studio would be they would be the ones to manage the different departments and make sure that the communication between departments and workflow is good. Naughty Dog apparently just didn't do that, which led to like a lot of miscommunication, led to a lot of work being done or a lot of work being done and not used, right? Or
sure, yeah,
like,
things, yeah,
yeah, like a like an animator. I keep saying animator, but that's like the thing I keep going.
That's
to.
The one guy you know that yeah. does any kind of
or like
video
in
stuff.
You know somebody who created an asset would work on that asset for 3 weeks and then by the third week realize that asset is not being used because of a decision being made in another section of the company being made and not communicated adequately.
Yeah.
Like stuff like that sucks and stuff like that needs to be fixed because that is then leading to. This whole culture, and that's been a thing that's been happening for a while. Like this article goes in on Uncharted 4 and kind of explains like the whole process of making Uncharted 4 and Amy leaving and
yeah,
Bruce
yeah.
Straley leaving. Like
and that's
after
also
that.
In Jason's book, Blood, Sweat, and Pixels.
Yeah, and so like this isn't a new thing for Naughty Dog. It's a thing that's been happening
yep.
for a while, and it seems like it is a result of bad management, not encouraging a better culture of work, and then also people leaving, and that then leaving holes that need to be filled in terms of work. So yeah, they have like a lot of work to do, and like you said, it's not like a light switch thing where all
yeah.
of a sudden it's like crunch is gone. But you know, shout out to Jason for bringing all this to light.
100%. Yeah, I think that's how you enact change: is that we have these conversations and have it brought to light for people to figure out. If like have a conversation with Naughty Dogs, right, internally,
yeah,
of like, are we pushing you? Is this not how do you make it better? And then us as gamers to be like, delay the game. And but the problem is you could delay the game inevitably. There's always
yeah,
going to be people who want to work overtime.
That's another thing
late.
Jason touches on is that like you know delaying the they did delay the game and that didn't help.
Yep.
And if they delayed the game again, that still wouldn't help because that doesn't change the culture. That gives them more time to work on the game. But the game gets delayed because it has to get delayed because. Them crunching isn't doing enough to then
yeah.
put the game out.
No.
So that's why the game gets delayed.
It's a complicated issue.
Yeah, it's complicated.
Ladies and gentlemen, we ask people watching live on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames to go to kindoffunny.com/you're wrong. Tell us what we screw up as we screw it up. We were good about answering them as we went. Then a lot of editorializing. That's not the place for this. You go to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. Bortizen does point out there was some breaking news today. There are 3 more games, ladies and gentlemen, coming to Google Stadia.
Oh.
Tom Clancy's The Division 2 with the new Warlords of New York expansion. The Crew 2 arrive on March 25th. And then, game of the year, Monopoly.
Oh.
April 28th.
Oh. The game you've been waiting for. By the way, I've been watching trailers for Blessed Unleashed. This game doesn't look that bad.
Oh, damn, really?
Yeah, it's like a Bandai Namco published MMO for the Xbox One exclusively, which I find to be
Can we get you in it somehow?
Get me in?
Yeah.
Here's the thing. If Blessed Unleashed wants to reach out to me to do like a hashtag sponsored thing.
Can we get a one-shot on this so Bless can pitch himself to Blessed Unleashed, please?
Blessed Unleashed, we have one thing in common. Our names, all right? I'm Bless. You're Bless. You're unleashed. I'm unleashed. Listen, we can work together. All right. People always tweet at me whenever you guys put out one of your Twitter posts or whatever, one of your advertisements, whatever, one of your trailers. People always tag me in them. And I'm going to be honest, I'm tired of it. But for a little bit of that moolah, I could be less tired of it. Just let me know.
Perfect. I feel like you had them in the first half, and then like you're
not
really
gonna lie.
They got to that last point, they were like,
"Fuck this kid."
Yeah, no.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's Kinda Funny Games Daily. Tomorrow it will be Blessing and Tim running the show over here. Remember, you can watch live twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. You can watch later youtube.com/kindoffunnygames. Roosterteeth.com. Podcast services around the globe. No matter what, go to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. You can get the show ad free. You can submit your questions and. You could stay tuned for the post show we're about to do right now. Until next time. Oh, we didn't talk about this either. Are we no longer shaking hands either, like you and Gary?
I mean, I can shake hands.
Okay,
Gary's
cool.
The one who's concerned.
Gotcha. Well, for the record, we're all concerned. But I'm not gonna like shake your hand and touch myself.
I wash my hands. So.
Yeah, I did too before this. Yeah. All
okay.
right, cool. Until next time, ladies and gentlemen, take care of yourself, and it's been our pleasure to serve you.